The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talman, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 124.
Easter eggs.
Easter eggs. Easter eggs.
Easter eggs.
Easter eggs. What about all our non-Christian friends?
Well, these are Easter. These are open source software Linux Easter eggs, and we were gonna. So, or what would we say? Passover eggs.
Wait,
holiday eggs.
Matt, are you suggesting that Easter still has, or eggs still have something to do with Easter?
Or just when you call them Easter eggs? Yes, yes, I am.
Well, I think it's not really the Easter part. Really, the reason why I think
I don't little, have my microphone on. Just.
Those little, well, believe me, I'm sure I'm picking you up. the little hidden software goodies that make use of the term do so because of the fact that when somebody is putting those eggs in little hidden places, people have to go find them. I think that's the connection. So it's not because it's Easter per se, it's just because of that whole process. All right, I got that out.
Now I'm Mike.
That was torturous. All right, so you're Mike now.
I'm Mike now.
Look out, world. So anyway, yeah, but and so what we're going to do today is, I think, throughout the show or whenever we want, I guess now maybe near the news, well, we may have found our favorite little Easter egg.
I found a couple pretty cool ones.
I didn't even put that together when you suggested that for the title, so I didn't look.
That's all right, man. I'm sure we'll cover you.
You didn't look, especially where she says, go find an Easter egg and share.
I didn't see that on there at all. I saw her suggestion of Easter egg.
And I didn't read your email, so I guess you're
all right.
That's all right. So anyway, well, let's get caught up on stuff.
All right, yeah. So the last 2 weeks?
Yeah.
I guess I'll start, if you guys don't mind.
No, yeah, no, I was.
Right
that's
ahead.
What I was thinking.
Went out to St. Louis. And it was a nice time. We drove, so it was kind of a long drive.
About 10 hours?
Yeah. Yeah, with including stopping. It's actually about an 8-hour drive, but then we stopped a couple times
with kids.
And yeah, on the way there, it was about 9 hours because we drove overnight. So they slept the whole way and didn't have to stop. But on the way home, it actually ended up being about 13 hours because we made like 3 stops and then we stopped at a family's house on the way. That was like 3 hours right there.
Okay.
But anyway, so it was really nice weather.
Mm-hmm.
We got there Thursday morning and I didn't put my jacket on until Sunday night when we got home.
Just in time for the snow?
Yeah.
The record breaking snow.
And then Monday night we got, another 1.5 inches of snow.
I think it was close, officially it was close to 3.
I know, we measured it at work. It was over, just a little over 2.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And I think officially at the airport it was like 3.1 or something. But anyway,
really?
Suffice to say we broke the record.
All right.
We needed 2 to break the record.
And we got it, plus. So I figure with that winter we went through, we deserved it.
There you go.
That's right. And it's just extremely busy at work, so I didn't get a whole lot of time to do any preparing for the show.
So you're saying we're just winging it today?
No, I did a little bit more, and it sounds like I did more than what Matt did, but
I got my ready with SAR, my SAR.
Yeah,
All right. That's good.
That's good, because I don't have a distro review today. I do for our next show, though. It's going to be kind of a fun one. But anyway.
Our PenguinCon show.
Yeah.
So. All right.
But in addition to screwing up my notebook when I tried to upgrade it. Oh my gosh. I thought I had saved it too because, you know, I went into the shell and tried to finish the upgrade. But I'm just it's gonna require, I think, a more basic, approach than that. But yeah, so it was the long-term support version of, Ubuntu. It's 12.4. And after 14.4 came out, I thought, I'm gonna upgrade it. But I don't think I approached it properly. I'm used to kind of the rolling upgrade, you know, every 6 months. And so I'm always current. This one was back in 2012. And, I think I had it go with the interim update. So I went from 12.04 to 12.10. And then I jumped to 13.10. It was when it went to 13.10 that it had issues. So So yeah, that'll be the next project. I'll talk about that in a few weeks, I'm sure. And then I signed up for, you know, after Ubuntu, or after Canonical announced that they were dropping Ubuntu 1, I don't use it, but then it made me start thinking about various, online file, sharing, or not file sharing, but, cloud providers. And I signed up for, I think it's Barracuda, their copy service, 250 gigs for like $9 or $10 a month.
Hmm, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty reasonable.
It is pretty reasonable, but,
what's AWS? Not AWS. What's their web storage one called?
S3?
Yeah. What do they get?
I'm not sure, but I've got, several gigs up there and I pay hardly anything. That's if I want to download it. But see, there's no syncing going on. It's just setting up there as a backup.
Yeah.
For, you know, files that don't change that I need to keep. So, but anyway, I'm having some problems with the syncing portion of it. If I re-log in, it syncs, and then it goes, then it pauses, and then it doesn't come out of pause. So I can put files into the copy folder, but they don't sync up. So I may end up dropping it and staying with Dropbox. So that was the other thing I did. I was working on trying to figure that out. What about you, Matt?
Nothing. I pretty much worked.
Yeah.
I worked 7 days. I worked just like straight through because I work on my days off a lot just because I got nothing else to do.
Yeah.
I haven't suggested something you could do on your day off.
What? What is that?
Find some news articles.
Oh, yeah. I can maybe do that.
Well, that was a zinger. I'm glad I was backed up for that one there. Oh, that's pretty funny.
I'm just messing with Matt. Anyway.
All right. So you worked. So must be busy then.
No, I worked. Well, I was at work, and I was kind of working. I was
distracting mostly, the people who were working.
No, because I go on the weekends. I go to the OTR office. I'm there all by myself. But I work on my scripts and things.
Okay.
That I use while I'm really working.
I see. All right. So it sounded like it was a straightforward week for you.
Yes.
Okay. I guess that probably is good.
Yes.
I've seen those weeks when they haven't been for you. So.
All right. So what about you, Mary?
I think I already...
She already
you did.
Went.
Oh.
Nice try, Tony. That was pretty...
Trying to stretch out the show a little bit. I am. Yeah, I'm doing show notes right now.
But you sounded really cheery and interested, though. All right.
That's right. I remember. Netbook. Broken, 1310.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, I broke that.
You broke your netbook?
Well, software-wise, I broke it. So
okay.
Anyway, so yeah. So it's a mess. That's all I'm going to say. So all I'm going to have to probably either factory reset it or undo the UEFI stuff and go back to just the regular BIOS arrangement and then just, you know, set it free, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
So... And then that way I'll have quite a bit more control over it and can do what I want.
Very cool.
All right,
so on to the...
Matt, what's happening with the Colonel?
Colonel news. I forgot about the Colonel news.
But we did it. So, Matt, what's going on in the Colonel this week?
I'm going to tell you what's going on in the Colonel this week. The main line is 3.15-RC1 that was released on 4.13. And then the newest stable version is 3.14.1 released on 4.14. Then we have stable version 3.13.10 released on 4.14. Long-term kernel. 3.10.37 released on 4.14. Long-term kernel 3.4.87 released on 4.14. And we've had a show before 4.9. Like, I wouldn't
remember. Yeah, okay. Before 4.9.
Yeah.
So it was like 4.6 was our last show. Or 4.5.
Oh, was it really?
2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Then we've also got another long-term kernel 3.12.7 on 4.7. And another one on 3.2.57 on 4.9.
Wow, people have been busy.
That's all the kernels except for the 2.6.3.2.6.1.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Excellent.
Excellent. Party on.
Party on. That's right.
Yeah.
All right.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
All right. So for the distros, this 2 weeks.
This
fortnight.
This fortnight.
Yeah.
This fortnight's up.
That's right. Well, we have to go scroll all the way back. There's been a lot of releases.
I'm starting at Smoothwall, so I'll just pick in when you get there.
Smoothwall.
All right.
Is that a developmental?
No, on the...
Oh, it is. So, rocks. Rocks cluster.
All right. On the 4.8, April 8th, we have Nextdoor 4.0. And Nextdoor is optimized for virtualization and network-attached storage. It's based on the Illumos kernel.
And we all know
ZFS.
Illumos, which came from Open Indiana.
Which came from?
Solaris.
Solaris,
that's right. I always want to say BSD. I don't know why. It's because I'm hoping. That's it. But, yeah, that next, what is it? Next, how is that pronounced? Nextentastore. You know that they have got scaling to the petabyte level.
Wow.
I mean, that's...
What file system does it use by default?
ZFS.
ZFS.
That's why.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, pretty impressive, I'll tell you. All right, Tony.
All right, so the next one we have is the Ultimate Edition 3.9.
Yes.
And it has KDE as its default desktop.
It does. And the developer is actually a guy named Glenn Cady, I think his name is, C-A-D-Y, Caddy, Cady. And his nickname is Theman.
T-H-E-E-M-A-H-N,
Theman.
Theman.
Yeah. He's the guy that created the Ubuntu Christmas Edition way back when. But what he did, another thing that he did, and then Canonical asked him not to use Ubuntu
of course,
logo because of trademark issue.
Because they're giant
pricks. So that's why he changed it, yeah. But he's the same guy that put together this client-side or system tray tool for Copy. That's the cloud storage service I just talked about. So I downloaded and installed it, and it works, but it still has that pausing issue that I talked about, because then I have to log out, and then when I log back in, it syncs. But it's like, once it gets done syncing, it goes into pause.
So,
but anyway, he's the guy that put that together. So, anyway, but one thing too, he says, or at least their site said that their releases conform to an odd-even number versioning system. So the even numbers are GNOME based only. The odd ones are GNOME as well as KDE, LXDE and XFCE. So he's got kind of a little system going.
So the odds are the multiple desktops, and which includes GNOME, and the even are GNOME only.
Yeah,
sounds a little prejudiced to me.
Sounds like he's a GNOME-y. All right, what do we got next?
Next up is VortexBox. Oh, 2.3, and it's a Fedora-based distro that turns unused computers into an easy-use music server or jukebox.
Yes. and I, when I read about that, I went out to their site, took a look around, too. I may give that a try. Of course, I say that about half the ones we talk about. I may give that a try. That's why I went to BSD. I don't have to do that now. I just
it uses a Squeezebox server.
I know. That's what I was just going to talk about.
That is really cool.
I have got a Squeezebox system, that little Logitech internet radio.
Do you?
Yes. And so that's why I thought I should give this a try.
Yeah.
And see how that works.
Yeah, I've actually had a Squeezebox server running in my house for like 2 years, almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's real low performance.
Low performance? It really kind of sucks.
We know what you meant, low bandwidth?
Or no, low system resource usage.
Okay. Minimal.
Yeah, minimal. And so it's really cool. It And you can have, you can play it from a web interface,
mm-hmm.
or they have a couple clients you can run on your computer, a Java one, there's a command line version, and then you can have all their hardware also, and there's, their radios are really cool. Mm-hmm. They have like little box things that have a screen on there and you can play through.
Oh yeah. I tell you, I really like it. Cause I've got one in my office at home.
You can add in podcast RSS feeds. And listen to the podcast straight from that.
Really?
Yeah, it's really
cool. Okay, I'm going to have to.
And there's all sorts of internet radio stations that are
I use those.
Attached on there, yeah.
I think DI.FM, they have quite a few. That's digital, what is it, digitally imported. .fm.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so it's a lot of electronic and digital music. Well, it's all digital music, I guess. But
and they, go ahead, I'm sorry.
More of the electronic type of music.
Yeah.
You know, rather than say jazz.
But there's also just regular radio stations that broadcast on the internet also.
Yep.
And so that's what I used it a lot for was I'd grab stations from all over the country and listen mm-hmm. to it. And it's interesting listening to the commercials from different area.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I like it.
Anyway, going on, also on the 10th, we have Zorin OS 8 Lite Edition. Which is a i386 only variant of the beginner's friendly distribution that features LXDE as the desktop.
Yeah, in this release too, it kind of got kind of mixed reviews, but at least from people that had tried it. But the folks at that released Zorin, they've revamped the look of their bootloader. With this release, so now switching, because that's the distro that allows you to switch between operating system looks, so you could have it look like a Mac, look like XP, look like Windows 7, what have you. They updated it so it's easier and, according to them, looks even better. So they've done that. And their desktop environment, they've got that Zorin menu that they use, of course, which allows, again, that's part of the whole customization thing. So, and interestingly enough, they released it just before, it's based on Ubuntu 13.10, which I think you probably mentioned, but they released it, how many days before 14?
A few days.
Maybe there's a good reason for that.
Yeah.
I should have waited a little bit. But maybe
well, if they waited, then they'd have to wait and then go through and configure and test and everything on the new version. And
all right. You're right, Tony.
But all right. On the 11th, we have GParted Live 0.18.0-2, which GParted, this is a Debian-based CD,
mm-hmm.
And it's just a live CD. It's not really something you install, but it's for disk management and data rescue, and it's very popularly used to be able to wipe partitions and recreate new partitions and stuff.
Yeah, and for people who may not know, GParted stands for the GNOME Partition Editor. And it's one of the few GNOME programs that I use. I like it. I use it even more than the KDE version, just because I think that's what I started using initially, and it's very solid. I like how it looks, how it performs.
All right. Very cool. And on the 13th, we have Makalulu Linux 6.0 Mate Edition. Or is it Mate? Mate.
Mate 1.8 Imperium Edition.
Imperium.
Yeah, which is some Latin word.
It's Latin for power to command.
Yeah. And one thing that this developer did with this release is he's got an install utility so that for new users, if they want to not have to deal with all the questions and things, it will take care of that for them. And he also he's he's got some new apps that he's put in this release, a repository repair utility, and there's also a system updater utility. He's got quite a few, and they're all written by him. And based on, are all based on the favorite system tools and other sections of the menu. So he's got that in there. And then the installer, I guess that's pretty much it. Yeah, I already mentioned the installer.
All right.
Just for new people. I mean, you can still go in there and answer all the questions, but they've got that one where it'll just shoot you right through.
That's cool. Is that what they're referring to as like a dual mode install or something? Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. And next up, it's for all those people who love the government and are a tinfoil hat against all conspiracy theorists. We have LPS, which is the Lightweight Security 1.5.1.
Yep.
Lightweight.
It's a portable. Lightweight portable security, yeah. It's a privacy-oriented live CD developed by the U.S. or the DOD, mm-hmm. the Department of Defense. But it says by Software Protection Initiative. And it's now available for download. And you know, I noticed that is a very different way that they explained it than in the previous releases. Because I remember that saying it's released from the DOD. And now they're saying it's released by the U.S., by the Software Protection Initiative.
Yeah, you know, I saw that and I thought, well, when I went in and took a look and, I saw it was U.S. government and I thought, well, kind of sneak that in there.
Right.
But, one thing, if you did take a look out at their site and read around a little bit, they do mention that, that it differs from traditional operating systems because they don't continually patch it. And that's simply because it's on a secure USB stick and it just gets plugged in and it just runs off that. So no, there's no persistent storage or anything. So you really can't get infected. Well, permanently.
Right.
Or it won't persist the infection. So.
I know when it originally came out, they were handing that out to government employees, so if they have to use a...
Yeah, public workstation.
Yeah, then they'd be able to get in and...
Do everything securely.
Right.
Yeah, and then they recommend that if you've gone to any banking site or any site like that, just immediately reboot right after you've done it, just to clear out anything that might have, you know, remained.
Yeah. So. All right. So on the next up, on the 14th, we have SlackL 6.0 Open Box. Live Open Box, which is a live variant of the project's lightweight distribution of Slackware's current branch.
There you go.
And it uses Open Box as the desktop manager. All right. We got lots of skip by. There's a lot of developments. Here's one. It's Rocks Clusters Distribution 6.1.1. Which is a CentOS-based distribution building real and virtual clusters.
Yep. Anything to say on that one, Matt?
No, I'm trying to find a news article. I'm sorry. it's about how OpenBSD is really been tearing the OpenSSL people to shreds in their commit logs, in the comments in their commit logs.
Oh, yes. I've read a little bit of that.
I can't find it. I read the whole thing. It was hilarious.
But, and these guys use ZFS, of course. And I think the version that's in use was updated in this release. Okay.
Yeah, and it's very cool. Although, being CentOS-based, I wonder how long it's going to stay like that and or
what was CentOS based? I'm sorry, I missed.
Rocks Cluster.
I did not hear it at all. I'm sorry. I apologize. What is it? Cluster based? Is that why it's called cluster? Or?
It's for building real and virtual clusters, man.
Thank you.
And its code name is Sanboa.
Sanboa. So yeah, and it's a picture of like this desert sand, and there's this snake coming out of it, so that's how they did it.
And it already includes the OpenSSL Heartbleed vulnerability.
It includes it?
No, it includes updates.
That's right. Tony, you're so funny.
It's funny how you leave one word out and it changes the whole sentence.
Yeah, like the word not and now.
Yeah, like the latest Ubuntu release, they didn't fix Heartbleed in it.
Yeah?
So you just have
to do fkit update to fix it?
No. It's not there. It's not fixed yet.
Huh.
Is that your news item?
No.
Really?
It's my little dig.
I wasn't aware of that. Thanks, Matt. I wonder if Kubuntu's is fixed.
Oh, I think Arx came through and found it for me.
What's that?
Nancy too, maybe.
Nancy too.
Whoever Nancy at SMLR is. Oh, that's our.
Yeah, that's our bot.
All right.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, let's get on to a couple more of these releases. We have IP Fire is released on the 16th. It's IP Fire 2.13 Core 76. I have not updated mine yet, but it says it fixes the strong swan. I have no clue what that is, but I'm sure you know we've talked about it in the past. IP Fire is a Linux-based firewall distribution.
Yeah, we know that.
Alrighty.
Tell us something we don't know. No, I think that some of these start off as development, then they switch to distro. Because I tell you, I like to try to catch up on all those. I don't think I said anything about IP Fire.
That's right. All right, next up we have Deft Linux 8.1, which is a Lubuntu-based distribution and live DVD with a large collection of open-source utilities for digital forensics and penetration testing.
Yes, and DEF stands for digital... Let me say that again. DEF stands for Digital Evidence and Forensic Toolkit. So they... And they've got a whole manual. I downloaded their manual to take a look at it. I mean,
oh,
it's pretty... Yeah, it's really comprehensive.
That's one of the things I'd like to get into with in my classes and taking my master's and going to something like that kind of stuff.
And I think they had mentioned that this was released at the Third National Conference. They had, I think, over 231 people that registered or that attended.
All right. Do you know where that conference was?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head, no.
I'll have to look that up. Maybe I can go sometime in the future. All right. And then we have a whole boatload.
The family.
Yeah, Ubuntu's.
Yep.
On the 17th, Ubuntu 14.04 was released. And I really haven't looked through any of like the really cool new things. I think they've moved the, what do they call it? The title bar back onto the actual window instead of sticking it up in the very top menu bar, or the menu for the title bar.
Okay.
Also,
it's now in the window of the application itself instead of,
instead of like the Mac style where it's up in that menu bar.
It's one thing I hated about Macs.
Yeah.
One of several things.
It's a very different if you're not used to it. So along with Ubuntu is Lubuntu, Ubuntu Kylin.
Which is the Chinese.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, well, yeah. Lubuntu is the LXDE. So Kylin is the Chinese. Edubuntu.
Ow.
Which is the educational variant, which has LTSP on it, which I played with that. It's pretty cool, the Edubuntu setup. You can run an entire, you can have one server, Edubuntu server, and run an entire computer lab off of it.
Or a whole
network boot. you could if you had a strong enough.
Or, you know where that'd be good. Maybe not for the applications that are in there, but... like public libraries when you want to run, well, probably some thin clients, they would do that, where you want to have computer access for people, but you don't want to invest in the separate
Oh, yeah,
boxes.
Very good. Yeah, LTSP, that's the whole idea of LTSP. But then also with Edubuntu, it includes all the educational software programs. It also includes programs where the teacher can be sitting at one computer and can take control of all the computers to run like a presentation.
Okay.
Or I think they can take control of individual computers to help students.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Kubuntu, which is Mary's favorite.
Rah-rah.
KDE.
Yep.
There is an official Ubuntu GNOME.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. And I think that's the list.
No, there's more.
What is KA?
KOS.
KOS.
Remember, I did a review of that last year, and as a matter of fact, this is their first anniversary.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they've been out about a year now, and I believe this was the first time they'd hit the big time, which is the front page of DistroWatch.
Yeah.
But yeah, last year when they were out for a little bit, I think I did a review of them.
It's in the middle of the Ubuntu list, but it's actually not Ubuntu-related. It's Arch Linux.
Yeah.
With KDE as a desktop and Calligra as the office suite.
That's right. KDE-centric.
That's right. Back onto the Ubuntu's, we have Zubuntu, which is XFCE. Ubuntu Studio, which is a ones for multimedia. Has a lot of range of multimedia for audio, graphics, and video photography and other publishing apps. We have My Ubuntu, or no, I'm sorry, Mythbuntu, which is Myth TV. So you can run like a DVR off of your computer using Myth TV. And that's the end of the Buntus developed. And the last on the list we have is Simplicity. That's on the 19th. Simplicity Linux 14, which is a puppy based for desktops and netbooks.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of interesting. I don't know if it's posted there or not, but it comes pre-installed with things like Dropbox and Skype and Chrome, which I think some purists are not going to appreciate that. But the fact that it comes pre-installed with Dropbox, I thought was kind of interesting.
It says it has a refined audio mixer. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and I think they've got several versions of it too, and including one called X, which is their experimental release. It uses KDE, and like the others, you know, comes with Chrome, LibreOffice, Skype, Dropbox, and several other apps. It's not designed for day-to-day use, however. It's an experiment to see what can be done with Puppy Linux. That's according to what they said.
The X version?
Yeah, yep.
Oh, because the main is LXDE, and then they have their own dock that they added in.
So.
All right, very cool. I guess we should be going on to the top five of the week.
I'm ready.
And I am not.
You were born ready.
That's right. All right, number five.
For what?
Is Elementary with 1517.
And trending down.
And number four is Lubuntu with 1538.
And trending up.
Number three is Debian with 1894.
And trending down.
Number two is Mint. Nope, Mint is in the number two spot.
Got all that minty goodness.
Didn't we have a bet about that?
No, never.
With 4279.
And trending up.
And in the number one spot is Ubuntu.
Yes, right. It returns to its rightful place.
It will be gone shortly.
With 4854.
They're trending up.
That's right.
All
right,
wow.
You knew that would happen. This is a long-term support release, so it's going to get a lot of publicity. And, of course, I always like to see where my little Kubuntu, look at that. It just jumped up to number 15. FreeBSD is at number 31 at 549. And then, of course, my little PCBSD is floating around under somewhere, I'm sure.
At 31.
Is it at 31?
Oh, that's FreeBSD, I'm sorry.
Yeah, FreeBSD. So I know it used to be around the 50s someplace, but...
Not even on the list.
Yeah, it is 67 at 263.
Oh, I tried searching for it, it didn't come up.
Yeah, well, you know, with that Heartbleed problem, they were working overtime to get that fixed, so after that issue was released and then I logged in a few days later, I had an update to fix it. Yeah, so they worked hard.
Good stuff.
All right.
Who worked hard?
The PCBSD folks to get that fixed.
That unopen SSL fix out?
Yep.
Well, CentOS, so that means Red Hat did, but within hours of the release, they had a patch to test, and then two more hours after they released it for testing, they released it permanently. And after they released it permanently, our servers were all patched 2 hours later.
Wow.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's really fast, Matt. Good job.
It's just something else, I'll tell you. I just, you know, and it's funny because they said two-thirds of the internet is exposed.
It was
and I'm thinking,
bad.
That's about the percentage of servers that run Apache or, you know, any of the...
Right. But they've done a historical look back at it, and they do not believe it was ever actually used as an exploit.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So well, all those rumors about the NSA using it, knowing about it for 2 years. And
I posted a thing about the NSA, too, saying how...
They
came out and flat out denied this right away, but
I don't believe anything they say.
But no. But that other thing where I forget what it was now. I posted it on my G+, where they were like, oh yeah, it was the NIST encryption. standards, where they were asked straight up, you know, have you done anything to weaken the NS, you know, the NIST encryption standards? And they're like, well, we haven't done anything to weaken them. We've worked really hard with all of the people in the industry and developed the best encryption possible. You know,
it's like pussy, a politician.
They pussyfoot around on an answer like that. What means you, makes you think, yeah, they probably did something to weaken the, you know, encryption standards. But when they came flat out and denied that they were aware of or exploited the OpenSSL Heartbleed before it was announced.
Well, to admit it would be tantamount to...
Well, but no, but they would have made a pussyfoot answer again instead of...
Yeah, because when you think of all the banking transactions, I mean, all of those transactions, if they were done on...
anything using OpenSSL, which is like everything using secure internet connection. So.
Yeah, I have a couple links on it, and I don't know if we want to talk about it now or we can talk about it later in the security section.
Let's talk about it later because I'm still looking for that OpenBSD commit stuff. That's hilarious stuff.
All right. So, do we want to talk about Easter eggs?
Easter eggs? I think we should talk about Easter eggs.
Yes, we can talk about Easter eggs. Now I guess the next step is to talk about them.
That's right. So what did you find, Mary? Well, I know you suggested this topic, and it's a pretty cool topic.
Yes. I found, there are actually a couple now. The one I found, I showed you earlier, and it's just a little one. If you, and it uses your Android device. And again, it may not be available from all manufacturers, but if you go to the settings, and I'm using Jelly Bean, and I'll find that out in just a moment. But if you go to About Device in Settings, and you click on it, and then you go to, let's see here. What did I click on before, Tony?
About, and then the model, the Android version.
Yeah, if you click on the Android version a few times, it's going to pop up and show you... a little cartoon.
Do you
picture.
See that, Matt?
See, of my...
it does that for Android.
Yeah, so it's kind of hidden. I thought it was kind of an Easter egg. And then...
What Easter egg?
What?
That old Bugs Bunny cartoon?
I'm not familiar with it.
I want an Easter egg.
I'm an Easter egg?
Oh. I want an Easter egg.
Oh,
it's a little kid, okay. Sam. I want an Easter egg.
Okay.
All right. Well, you know...
Oh, go ahead.
I found a... I'm sorry. I found an article that has 10 Easter eggs for Linux. And there's a couple like Vim related ones. In Vim, if you type in colon, like in the command line at the bottom, help 42, you know what you get?
No.
Help 42, what is 42?
It's the answer to everything.
Yeah, it says, what is the meaning of life?
Yep.
It, the universe, everything, and that's what it says us out
it
to you.
It gives you a little.
It says, where Douglas
you
Adam,
the terminal?
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
in Vim.
Oh, in Vim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Vi.
Vim, which Vi is his alias to Vim anyways now, but.
Help 42.
No help, colon.
Or colon help 42.
Yeah. Oh well, every command in Vim starts with a colon. Right.
All right. and it comes back. Douglas Adam, the only person who knew this, what this question really is now dead, unfortunately. So you might wonder what the meaning of death is. Is that what it says? Or is yours not come back with anything?
Yeah. So now you might wonder what the meaning of death is.
There you go.
Yeah. And then you quit twice to get out of it. QQ. There's an Emacs one where you can play Pong. There's a bunch of games built in.
But who uses Emacs anymore?
A couple of guys at work. Mark, one of the guys at work, is such a hardcore Emacs user. If you watch him type, his hands are offset just a little bit. So that it makes they're not quite like on the home row perfectly. Oh. So that the Emacs key bindings are easier to reach.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good. So keep going, Tony.
Well, you know, an apt-get at the end of the help.
Yeah.
It says apt has super cow powers.
Yep. I saw that one.
Although if you type apt-get moo, like the command for apt-get is moo, mm-hmm. M-O-O.
A cow
comes up and says, have you mooed today? That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Some of those Easter eggs.
But aptitude does some of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Although in aptitude, if you do aptitude VVVV, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Vs and then moo,
mm-hmm.
you know what you get?
Mm-mm.
You get this funny little thing. And if you add another V, so there's 6 of them.
Yeah.
It says, what is it? It's an elephant eaten by a snake.
Oh, yeah. It's just kind of rough outline of this little line that is a big shape.
Do you know what else I like?
No.
SL.
At SL?
No, just SL. Type SL in your terminal. Open a terminal and type SL.
It says SL is currently not installed.
Oh, I have to start my... Hang on a second here.
Are you in BSD, Mary?
I am.
Then it might not be in BSD.
I think I'm crashed.
Oh, it looks like it.
Well, my hard drive is still doing something, so...
Here, you ready?
Yeah.
Oh, it's not installed. I forgot I needed to...
Oh,
I recently reinstalled my laptop.
Yeah, bash command is not found. I can't type an apt-get install either, can I?
It's a...
Yeah? What does it do?
It's come on. It's a train. A train drives across your screen.
Yes, I have installed at home. I forgot about that.
I have seen that. Yeah. Yeah, that is cool.
It's so, for when you accidentally mistype LS.
Okay. That's pretty good. So is it ready now?
It will be. I had to answer yes. Here you go.
All right. There it goes. Yeah, that's pretty good. All right. Well.
All right.
That's enough of the eggs. Or do you have another one?
There's one more.
One more? Okay.
That if you have Traceroute installed on your computer,
mm-hmm.
if you do Traceroute -M254-Q1, then obi1-screy.net.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Then what it does is, starting at hop 15, it goes through the lines for Star Wars. It's a Star Wars tribute. So,
oh, okay.
And so what it is each of the hosts that it pings, the host names are. So it's like host name 15 is episode 4. Or it's.
Oh, are you talking about. Four. That's
and
not.
Then it's a trace
that's
route.
Not blinking lights, is it?
No, it's a trace route. And then number 16 is A New Hope. Number 17 is It's a Period of Civil War. And they keep on going down. Rebel spaceships striking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire.
There's blinking lights, too.
During the battle, Rebel spies managed to steal secret plans. So it's kind of cool. And it just keeps on going and going. Definitely these will be on in the show notes. But it's pretty cool.
You can watch Star Wars in Telnet.
I saw that.
That one's on this list, or it has something in here.
Who uses
Telnet? Telnettowel.blinkinlights.nl.
Yes, yes, do it, Telnet. And I've never watched the whole thing, but it's Star Wars, the original Star Wars movie. Done in all ASCII art.
Oh my gosh. Well, there goes your, I'm sure, our connection, look at that. I barely have a connection.
Oh, come on, it's Telnet. It says IPv6 is color now. That's cool.
20th century text. With a little spotlight.
Yeah. Star Wars.
This is the whole thing?
Yeah, I've never watched the whole thing. I only watched like the first 30 seconds, but
it's a period of civil war in the Rebel spaceship. Attacking from a hidden base have won their first victory against the evil Galactic Empire. During the Battle of Rebels, spies have managed to steal secret plans to blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if you watch it, you get actually the shootout scene on the spaceship when they capture Princess Leia. They do all that. It's great.
Really?
Yeah. That's as far as I've ever watched it.
They must have taken the movie and ran it through some kind of a converter that, you know, would generate that based on, you know, if the video is doing this.
I have no idea.
That must be how they did that.
I'm going with they hand-coded the whole thing.
I don't think so. Not for a whole hour. I mean, for a whole movie. But who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. This looks pretty cool. And nobody can see it up there. You know what?
All right.
We should keep on going.
All right, we'll keep going here. All right, so what do we get next? Is it your tool thing there?
My tool thing. We can do my tool thing.
That now or
my tool thing? My thingy tool?
Yeah.
Usually goes news, then tool tip.
Oh, okay.
Okay. We can do news, then tool tip.
All right. News.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
All right.
So news. Do we have news? Yeah. Mary, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I've got a few. And I had posted this out on my Google Plus stream. This was kind of interesting. It was based on a judgment in Europe. There was a computer purchaser. He had purchased a Lenovo computer, and he did not want to pay for Windows on it.
Or any of the ransomware on there.
Yeah,
or bloatware or whatever you want to call
it. That's right. So he won a refund finally. He's a French laptop buyer. He won a refund from Lenovo after a 4-year legal battle over the cost of a Windows license he didn't want. Now, they're thinking that this particular judgment could open the door for others to do the same thing.
Right, because it's based on EU law, not French law.
Yeah, so so anyway, he and I think he ended up getting like $1,000. I suspect that some of that covered the court costs.
No, he got $1,000 for his legal fees.
That's under the court costs, yeah.
He got 800... Well, it was euros. 1,000 euros for his legal fees, and I believe it was 800 euros in punitive damages.
Okay.
And then reimbursed
120.
Yeah, 120 pounds. Yeah. 120 euros
for the software. So I saw that. I thought that was pretty good. But it took a heck of a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, another one I thought was pretty cool was the fact that there's several patent trolls out there.
Oh yeah, and they love East Texas.
Exactly. So what happened is that one of them is Rockstar, and Rockstar has some pretty close ties to Apple
and Microsoft.
Yeah, and you know they're always picking on Google. So what had happened is that they had filed the case in East Texas
because
it has a history of being friendly.
Oh, I know this story. And they used a bogus
sub company.
Yeah, yeah. Was created like the day before they filed their lawsuit. Or
yes,
something.
and they really? Were trying to say that this company didn't do work or didn't do business in Texas. The only problem was when they went back to the company filings, which it's a Delaware company because Delaware is very friendly to corporations. When you went back there and took a look at the filings that were done to create the company, they said their main business was down in Texas.
Right.
The judge says, "Well, this is going to go to California."
Yep.
So it was really kind of a win for Google, at least an initial win on this case for Google against the patent.
Well, Silicon Valley's in the right district to be much more friendly towards Google than East Texas.
Yeah, and they went on to note that Apple, a Silicon Valley stalwart, is the majority shareholder of Rockstar, and they paid $2.6 billion of the $4 or $5 billion purchase price for the patents and all the stuff that they've got. So it was pretty interesting. I saw that. I like that. All right. And then the only other one I've got is this one. This is sort of an outcome of the whole Heartbleed situation. Now, Tor, of course, heavily relies on this. And part of Tor has been patched. However, there are still some parts of the Tor network that are not patched yet, simply because those servers lie within countries where they use volunteers, and they may not have patched them, and they're estimating about 10%. This was as of yesterday. So they are figuring 10% still may not have been patched, and I thought that was kind of an interesting story, especially because of Tor's, their not mandate, but the focus of that particular network, and that's for anonymous browsing. And so 10%, you got 10% chance, you know, depending on where you're routed, to have a problem.
Yeah.
And maybe not be so anonymous. So anyway, yeah, so I caught that too. And I think that's kind of it for me in the news.
All right. Well, you know, last week I was, I went to a mug meeting. It's mm-hmm. The Michigan Users Group Linux.
Why are they called Michigan Users Group, Tony?
Because it was mainly Unix users at the time.
Right. It predates Linux.
That's wow. Right.
That's how long they've been meeting.
Yeah, it's the oldest, computer-related users group.
In the state?
In the state of Michigan.
Okay.
And, I volunteered. I'm going to be on the board now.
Ooh.
So, yeah. I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to be doing
yet.
Is that
his news item?
No,
Tony's on the mug board. That's the news item.
Hey.
No, but actually, what we had a guest speaker, and it was a guy, a developer for Facebook. And his project that he works on is some of the load balancing servers. And each cluster has like 7 load balancing servers. And it's split off like 3 and 4 that they're like tiered on top of each other. And his is like the 3 level. And then the other ones below are, but he was talking about how all the connections they deal with and the way everything's distributed out. And, it's pretty cool. It was a lot of, you know, it's the largest website in the world. And they have a couple data centers right now, like large data centers. And they're building a new one. The one in, is it North Carolina or South Carolina? Somewhere over in the Carolinas. It's right next to Google.
In the Carolinas. You can save yourself by saying in the Carolinas.
But when last winter, or during the winter, when the really cold hit, the utilities came to them and said, can you do something to use less power so we can redirect that to the to the residents? And they said, okay. And that was his job, was he went duk, 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 and sent traffic to California instead. And then that was it. They used less power. So that was kind of cool. They said they're in the Carolinas because nearby there's a hydro plant. So they said most of their energy that they use is from reusable resources.
Yeah, hydroelectric.
Very good.
Renewable resources. And then they're building a new one in Iowa. And that...
corn fed. It'll be corn.
Iowa. Yeah. I didn't know there was a backbone big enough that went through Iowa.
Near Des Moines. Yeah. They're building a gigantic one there. It's bigger. It's going to be their biggest one yet. And, I think he said it was going to cost them like $2 billion to build. And, that's going to be,
right?
Solely powered by wind, by a wind farm.
You could do it in Iowa.
Yeah.
I worked in Iowa for about 6 months.
North Dakota, same way.
Oh, yeah.
You do it in Washington, D.C., powered by wind.
That's all hot air, though.
Heat and wind.
Anyway, so some of his things he was going through, he said he listed off this site that they have. It's code.facebook.com. And it talks about all their open source projects that they contribute to. They create and contribute to. And they said they are the number one contributor to MySQL.
Really?
So it's kind of cool.
Whoa.
But on that, if you go to code.facebook.com/projects, mm-hmm. and then there's a link to their GitHub page.
Yeah.
And let me scroll down. There's 6 pages of projects that they have on there. And it's just a lot of stuff. I didn't realize how much they contributed.
Did you like
pretty cool.
the page, Tony?
I have not.
Just kidding.
The Facebook page, like it. Yeah, that's funny.
That's what I bet, yeah.
So it was just a lot of interesting stuff. I have to look it up, but there is a YouTube video that we did of the meeting. You know, it's a hangout. So it recorded mm-hmm. onto YouTube. So I'll have to look up that link and stick it in the show notes.
That's I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But it's pretty cool. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Matt. You've never let that stop.
Well, no, but we were talking about style guides or something like that. Just made me think of this, weren't we?
Can we just talk about somebody's style guide?
You're thinking work. You were at work talking about that. No, we did not.
Really?
No, I don't remember saying anything about it. Unless style guide is a code name for something else.
No. No, something made me think of it just now, so that's why I remembered this.
Okay.
It's Google's coding style guides. They're available online.
Oh, okay.
And they have one for C++, Objective-C, Java, Python, HTML and CSS, JavaScript, AngularJS, Common Lisp, and C and XML. But they have a shell style guide, which I have read and now try and adhere to.
For creating shell scripts.
So give us an example. Give us an example of a style that Google
Maybe something you didn't know about.
80 lines.
No more.
I mean, 80 characters. 80
characters. 80 columns.
80 columns. Thank you.
You're right.
80 columns. If your line is longer than 80 characters, you have to chop it and put it and move it down.
And what's the character that extends it to the next line? Is it underscore?
It's the slash.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, so backslash.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, because that escapes out the carriage return.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I just knew that.
Wow.
I just knew that you could, when you wanted to continue your thing on the next line, you used the backslash. But you're right, it does escape the carriage return.
Yeah.
Which is actually a new line character and not a carriage return.
Oh.
Carriage return. Carriage return line feed.
That's Microsoft.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Line feed. I had no
idea. Not carriage and carriage return. They do a carriage return and a line feed. And, and Unix style is only a new line feed.
Okay. Every time I've heard of carriage return, it hasn't been related to Microsoft. It's been related to a typewriter.
No, like at the end of, if you look at the unprintable characters if you use, Notepad, at the end of each one is going to be a CR and an NL.
LF.
Oh.
LF.
Oh, LF, line feed, you're right. Mm-hmm. A CR and an LF.
Okay.
And in Linux, there's just the new line.
It's N or NL?
The escape character for it is a slash N.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what the...
All right.
Wow.
So
I wondered about 80 characters, because I've been messing with line scripting and putting in, commenting.
It's the old printer.
I was wondering how wide to make it.
It goes back to the old terminals. They were 80.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like the VT100.
See, there's a reason why I'm here to tell you about the back in the day.
I think it was the VT100 was limited to 80 columns.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right.
Okay. Wow. Where were we?
I don't remember. Somebody said style guide. I'm swearing by it.
Send me that link. We need to get that in the.
I'll put it in the. In the chat, that's all the Google style guides, and this is their shell scripting style guide.
How is your shell scripting coming along?
Doing fairly well. Mm-hmm. Did I talk about Shift last time?
I don't know.
Our French Canadian friend, I can't remember his name right now. Guillaume, that's it. Guillaume told me about Shift. I'm sure I talked about it last time.
Oh, yeah.
He told you about something else, and then he told you a second thing, I think.
Because I was struggling with GitOps, and he says, did you ever think about using Shift?
That was GitOps.
And I haven't had a chance to look at it anymore. I'm still using the positional arguments. I got a solid handle on those. I can use positional arguments.
Well, you know, it's always good to, it can be very good to default to what you know when you haven't had time to look at something new. So, all right.
All right, very cool.
Next.
What else? Do we have any more news?
We have the OpenSSL debacle with OpenBSD, where they've imported the OpenSSL code, and they were stripping it all down and fixing it all up to meet their own standards. And I can't find it now. I did have a link to just the straight commits with all the comments, but I can't find it now. I have this, which is a web, sort of the same thing, but made into the version of a web page, which I've just posted into the IRC. It's opensslrampage.org.
Whoa.
And And it goes through, and they tear the OpenSSL people a new one.
Really?
Yeah, especially Theo. It's hilarious. Well,
you know, here's the thing. And I appreciate the focus on security. I think that that has to be a primary driver for these things. But when you're kind of ripping a new one for a project that has a few people in there.
They've had $1 million budget for the last however many years, and OpenSSL has had a couple.
All right, you've just exposed the fact I haven't read it. and it was sounding so good.
You know, OpenBSD's had something like just a couple hundred thousand dollars.
Oh, you know. Yeah. Oh, good for him.
So, yeah. So are they contributing back their changes then? Or?
I'm sorry?
Are they contributing back changes?
Oh, of course.
To OpenSSL?
Yeah.
OpenSSL has had $1 million budget?
Yes.
What is that money gone for?
Who knows? Bad code, it looks like to me.
Well, wait a second. Bad? Well, I mean, did they expose more in their code structure that was bad?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, OpenBSD's found a ton of stuff that's just horrible.
Well, maybe OpenBSD should take that on as kind of an adjunct.
Well, that's maybe what's going to happen if they're going to strip all the crap out of it. Mm-hmm. It's like with OpenSSH. They originally wrote OpenSSH for OpenBSD. Mm-hmm. It was just so good that everybody ported it to their stuff.
Yeah, and everybody uses it now.
So the same thing might happen with OpenSSL after the OpenBSD guys get done with it.
Hmm. Okay.
All right.
And I also posted a link to their actual Git repo where if you want to, you can go through and read all the
extra
comments.
Oh, yeah, I see that.
And then I have this one here, which is from their mailing list. And it says, what Ted is saying may sound like a joke. So years ago, we added exploit mitigations to countermeasures to libc, malloc, and mmap so that a variety of bugs can be exposed. Such memory access will cause an immediate crash or even a core dump. Then the bug can be analyzed and fixed forever. Some other debugging toolkits get them too. To a large extent, these come with almost no performance cost. But around that time, OpenSSL adds a wrapper around malloc and free so that the library will cache memory on its own and not free it to the protective malloc. So it kept from crashing on the OpenBSD when you ran it on OpenBSD by exposing all those bugs.
See,
they intentionally hid the bugs from OpenBSD.
Huh. Oh. Shocking.
It's
supposed to show what a superior operating system the BSD operating system is?
OpenBSD is fantastic.
It is.
I wish I knew more about it and could run it on a server, but I don't know enough.
You should just switch over and run it on your laptop.
It's definitely not a desktop. Not for me, it's not a desktop.
If you just want to run basic crap, I mean, you could, but. And by crap, I'm just talking about programs.
I don't even think the OpenBSD guys run OpenBSD on their desktops.
You know, I wonder what they run on their desktops. That would be an interesting question.
I don't know.
I'm sure it's not FreeBSD. Okay. Well, Matt, that was an exciting exchange.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have a couple links for the security bit. We have talking about the Heartbleed.
The heart bleed that caused a lot of heartbeats to go fast.
Right.
That one.
Well, it's called the heart bleed because it's related to the heartbeat extension in OpenSSL. And, the bug in it, what it does is it opens up and allows 64K of memory to to be taken
back out.
Yeah, it dumps it out to cache instead of emptying it out when it only happens when there's like a low memory situation, and so attackers will create this low memory situation and then pull that cache when it's done. All right, so it's potentially that you can grab passwords. I mean, 64K
It's so random, though.
Exactly.
That you have no idea. It's just you're grabbing
whatever random it caches out.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean, or they can't specifically target passwords.
Right.
Exactly.
So the other thing is it's impossible to historically look back to see if anybody's used it. So they've asked people to create honeypots with this old version and see if people are actively attacking. And I haven't heard the end of that yet, so I don't
know.
Well,
I just read something recently, and I mentioned it earlier, that they did go back and look, and they believe that no one has used it.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
All right.
So you're saying I don't need to change my passwords?
No, I'd still change your passwords.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and what's interesting is, and I have a couple links on here. One is to Security Now podcast, and he has a bunch of links in his stuff, and he explains it really well. Steve Gibson.
Yes.
And he goes through and he talks about it, like he goes back to like why was the heartbeat even needed. And it's because typically, you know, before that SSL was used on just TCP connections and UDP connections were needed to have an SSL connection also. So they because of the way UDP is created, there's no
it relies on the software to do error correction as opposed to the protocol.
Right.
TCP does its own error correction. UDP relies on the software using the connection to do the error correction.
Right. And then it also, it goes down to the, whether the connection is still open or not, and how long to keep those connections open for. So TCP will know and it gracefully closes connections where UDP will just say, here you go. And then there's a
timeout limit.
There is a timeout, but, you know, some people, agree to that and some people don't, or servers. So that's where they've created that heartbeat so that it can go out and say, hey, are you there? Hey, are you there? And then keep that connection going
over SSL. Can you hear me now?
Right. anyway, so that's where it all started from, which was, it was a pretty neat explanation of how you went through and did it.
Is that the cartoon you were talking about?
No, and then there's XKCD. Yes. Did one also about it, which is pretty cool.
They did the heartbeat in like 30 seconds. I forget. What was the name of it?
It's called the heartbeat explanation.
Yes.
Heartbleed explanation. And it goes through it. There's like three pain or six pains that it goes through and explains, and it's kind of neat. So I definitely go through and take a look at that. But that was like the big thing, you know, in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, of course,
that happened.
And I mean, we had a bunch of people working double shifts on it and stuff.
Oh,
because after we got all our servers patched, then all of our clients needed new SSL certs.
Oh yeah.
And a bunch of them had bought their SSL certs from us.
So you had to go through and recreate.
We use a third party for those SSL certs.
Oh,
it was quite the trick.
Yeah. See, you had to. Is it revocate? Or what are the,
revoke?
Yeah, revoke. Revocation list. Revoke the old certs and create new certs and then you gave them to the customers and
then we installed them on their sites.
Or then you did that too? That's good. So a lot of.
And then we have also a lot of customers who didn't get certs from us. And we emailed all of them and said, we've patched our servers, but you need to update your cert. We'll install it for you once you have it, but you need to get an updated cert.
Yeah.
And not all of them have done that.
All those Chinese websites. Oh, they better hurry.
And then there's one more link I just remembered about. It's on Mashable.com.
Mm-hmm.
They have a list of like who is vulnerable and who is not. And this is now, I don't know if they've done an update, but it's about a week old at this point. But it says, like, go through social networks. Do you need to change your password? Facebook? Yes. Instagram? Yes. LinkedIn? No. Pinterest? Yes. Tumblr? Yes. Twitter? It's unclear. It goes through, like, other companies.
Characters.
Apple and Amazon? No. But Google? Yes. Yahoo? Yes.
One of the reasons,
Microsoft? No.
Do you know one of the reasons some of those are no?
Because they're on
IIS?
No.
Oh.
Why? Oh, because they're using an older version.
All our servers still running CentOS 5 didn't need patched.
Yeah, because there's only a specific version range.
From like 1.0 to 1.1F or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Is the vulnerable versions.
So this, and it goes through all sorts of different ones. So it's pretty cool. You definitely go through this list And you may want to think about changing your password.
Because somebody else I follow on Twitter works at another hosting company. And, and he goes, what was his thing? Woohoo! We only had to upgrade 25 servers. Running old software sometimes is a good thing.
Sometimes bleeding edge is not so good.
I don't know if I would call CentOS 6 bleeding edge ever.
No, you're right. You're right. Well, maybe in the server world, but. So any more security? I have one security thing, Tony. I'm gonna just kind of horn in on your section of the show.
No, that sounds good.
And it actually has to do with the TrueCrypt audit. Because, you know, I had contributed to that project. Is TrueCrypt edited yet? And I was thinking
they're about
months.
30%?
Yeah, they got through part one. But it was like months before I think the last update they had on their site was October, and then nothing in November, nothing in December, and, you know, finally, they reported, I got an email from them this week that said, that phase one of the audit is complete. They found 11 vulnerabilities, all rated low to medium severity. So to date, we have found no zero-day critical vulnerabilities or backdoors, intentional or otherwise, in the code. In phase two, we will conduct a formal cryptanalysis as well as examine the OSX and Linux ports. So I think this one, you know, obviously
that was
the Windows
port, yeah.
Yeah, so... Anyway, but they've got, you can go out there on the web and get the full PDF report of it.
Oh, that's why I read said 33%. Because they finished the Windows, now they still got the OS X and the Linux ports to do.
Yeah. So, anyway, but they're figuring that they're going to complete those probably sometime in the mid-May timeframe. And so I guess we'll see. So.
All right. Have you used TrueCrypt?
Yes.
What do you use it on?
I used it on, I think I used it for, I don't know if it was for work or for something. I used it a few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not using it currently, though.
Just as like a two-sentence.
A container.
What would you explain TrueCrypt as?
It's basically a method to either encrypt a drive, a partition, or create an encrypted container within your directory structure to hold sensitive documents.
Okay. That sounds pretty cool. Yeah, and that's how I know it also.
Yes.
And you can also do whole drive encryption with it also.
Yes, you can. You can.
Which, for laptops, it's a really good thing to have.
Encrypting your bootloader partition.
Though. I don't know if I'd, yeah, that'd be kind of...
You have to decrypt it at the BIOS level.
You'd want a secure boot for that.
No, isn't that what TrueCrypt does? It decrypts it and then boots? So you have like a two-step decryption or a boot process. So you have TrueCrypt, then decrypts the drive, and then your grub kicks in and boots the operating system.
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't know where to look at it.
What it would cause a lot of problems is if you update grub and grub overwrites TrueCrypt boot, then you would pretty much be screwed.
I was going to say, then you'd be in the same position I am with my little notebook. Going to have to... Reboot or redo it.
Yeah. So. And if you want to get it installed for Ubuntu operating systems, there's a PPA to go through and install that.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's very cool.
All right. So, does that kind of conclude the security portion of the show?
I believe so.
Okay. Lockdown with Tony Bemis. That's the name of it, Tony. Lockdown.
With
Tony Bemis. Yeah. So, all right.
All right. We have a toolbox, then.
Toolbox.
All right.
Toolbox.
Wait.
Tools from the toolbox.
Okay, Matt, tell us
about
it.
All right. I'm trying to find right now. I just noticed that I can't see some of my characters because obviously it's got a lot of non-words in it because it's... Because
you were typing...
No. Because of, like, the column headings in SAR and other things that you would use. And and I can't read them because the red squiggles at the bottom are blocking some of the characters. I'm trying...
Turn that off right there, yeah.
Where?
Right there. Yeah, turn it off.
That's what I was looking for. There. Thank you very much, Mary.
Hey, you're welcome. Always here to help.
LibreOffice by Mary.
Oh, mine crashes, but we won't get into that.
No, normally I want it on. It's a good thing.
For it is usually. Good. Oh, yeah.
System monitoring with SAR, the system activity reporter.
Well, stop for a second. You could have control A'd that whole thing and gone up there and increased the font by a few degrees.
Why?
Because then you could still see your misspellings, but you could also read them.
Oh, yeah. They're not misspellings, though. They're spelled right.
The non-recognized words. How's that? Yes, that's politically correct. But actually technically correct, too.
All right. Take two.
All right. I'll shut up.
System monitoring with SAR. System activity reporter. Which, by the way, I could have swore I did a SAR thing before, but I couldn't find it. So I don't know if I did or not.
Like you started notes like a month ago?
No, and... like I actually did it on the show.
Oh, I don't remember.
So anyway, the SAR utility, which is part of the SysStat package, is used to review historical performance data on your server. The amount of various system resource utilization. System resources... Okay, I didn't word that quite right, I don't think, but...
That's all right.
Can be seen from any given time frame up to 7 days in the past to help troubleshoot performance issues or to optimize performance. The SAR utility is usually installed with most flavors of Linux. Did I?
You referred to it. But we didn't do an entire...
Episode 114. Remember Triskaidekaphilia or Peggy?
Oh, yeah. Did I do anything on SAR that time?
Well, I think there was a reference to it. You can run the SAR command that will tell you the version. So.
Oh, no. I bet you I did. Go there.
So for those of you who have forgotten, we're going to tell you again.
And this is completely different. So.
Yeah. So really what it is, Matt, is a part two.
There you go.
It's part two. Like the open BSP part one and then part two.
It was the toolbox. It was using SAR for monitoring your system.
As I was doing this, I'm thinking to myself, man, this really feels familiar.
Yeah, and you said yum and how to apt-get install.
I don't do all that this time.
See, I think this is step two. This is part two of the tutorial. So you just continue, Matt. That's okay.
The SAR utility is usually
privately to ourselves.
The SAR utility is usually installed with most flavors of Linux, but might not be enabled. To enable SAR, you have to run the SA1 and SA2 shell scripts at periodic intervals with cron. So if you run crontab-e, which we all know what crontab-e does, right?
It edits your crontab.
Thank you very much. So if you run crontab-e while root and give it some settings like these, which are 10, 0, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, ****, user lib 64, SA1, then that will run the basic SAR utility that captures the data every 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Fantastic.
And then you would also make another one that would be 0, ****, user lib 64, SA2-A. And what that does is SAR also makes those that it creates every 10 minutes, those captures it does, are created in a binary file that you need to use SAR to read. And it's located in varlog SA. And they're named SA and then the date of the month that you're currently in. So that's how you can go back and look at historical ones. If you just do SAR by itself, it reads the current one it's writing to. So.
Okay.
But that second one does is every day after it rotates out the SAR log, and then it's, creates a human readable dump of it.
Mm.
But SAR is so searchable and usable that I've never ever used the human readable dumps. I don't know why you would. Well,
if you wanted to use it to build reports that use a couple different utilities.
I use SAR and then send that SAR data. Like, I'll issue a SAR command to get the data I want, and then send that to a file.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, yeah, because you can do all kinds of things with SAR that just aren't available in the human readable thing, because you would use whatever text editor to read it. So you wouldn't have... With SAR, you can give it switches and things, flags, so it only shows you certain data. So, and even data in, for a certain time frame on a certain day. So.
Hmm. All right.
So you have SAR-R, which will do show you your memory. And the column headings there are KB mem free, KB mem used, percent mem used, KB buffers, KB cached, KB commit, percent commit, KB active, KB inactive, and KB dirty. Now, this is the current SAR. Like, the SAR on our servers, though, does not have these headings. They're slightly different. And between CentOS 5 and CentOS 6, they're even differenter.
Differenter.
So, what they do is, KB free will tell you the amount of free memory and available kilobytes. KB mem used tells you what it's using in kilobytes by the... But it does not take into account memory used by the kernel itself.
Does KB3 put it on a CD for you?
No.
Get it?
I get it.
KB3.
And then percent mem used tells you your percent of your total memory that you're using. And the only other real important one that I look at are buffers and cached and commit. If you see your buffers and your cached numbers dropping and your percent commit growing... Mm-hmm. Your server's going down. You need to do something now. So. And then you can look at SAR-W. SAR-W will give you swapping stats. Uppercase W. SAR-uppercase W. So it'll tell you the total number of pages it swaps in and swaps out. SAR-U tells you the CPU stats. And if you just did give it -U, it does them all as a combined unit. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Sure. Like, if you're on a 24 CPU server, including regular cores and hyperthreads and whatever, it's going to show you all of the CPU usage in one block.
Oh, right.
But you can give it a switch after the switch. Like, you can say SAR-U all, and then it'll show you for every individual processor. But...
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of information. I never use that when I'm on, you know, one of our bigger servers. If I'm on one of the older ones that only has maybe 4 cores, I'll use it. But I don't usually.
All right.
And the headings there are percent user, percent USR, percent nice, percent system, percent sys, percent IO weight, percent steel, percent IRQ, percent soft, percent guest, percent gnice, percent idle. And, like, users, percentage of CPU utilization that occurred while extracting at the user level. So in user spaces. It's CPU that was used for something user space. USR is the percentage of CPU utilization while user level. See, that's the same thing. I don't understand what they do there. Or I copied and pasted the wrong thing. Because most of this I took right out of the man page.
I'm voting the second one.
Most of this I just took right out of the man page, and I'm betting I accidentally copied and pasted the one twice.
Have you ever heard of SysDig?
Oh, no. Oh. The difference is the first from percent user includes time spent running virtual processors, and the second one does not include time spent running virtual processors.
I see.
So, and then nice is obvious, time executing at the user level with a nice priority, and percent system, that's obvious, and sys, they're the same as user and USR. And then IO wait, that's pretty obvious too. It's when the processors had to wait on something else to complete before they could move on. So, steel, that should always be zero. I've never seen that. Even on a server that was crashing, I've never seen steel not zero. So, you know why? Because it's with hypervisors. CPUs while the hypervisor was servicing another virtual processor. So, I don't know what that means. Anyway.
I don't use that one very much. Sarv-B, I do use frequently. Sarv-B is your IO stats for your disk IO stats. And, your column headings there are TPS, RTPS, WTPS, B reads, and B writes. So TPS is the total number of transfers per second, both read and write transfers. And then RTPS is read transfers per second, write WTPS is, can you guess? Can you give it to me?
What?
Write
transfers per second, yes. Yes. And B reads per second and block reads per second. That's the amount of data it actually read from or wrote to disk in blocks, which are 512K usually.
Okay.
And then there's SR-Q, which will do your load, which the column, I use this one a lot too. The column headings there are runq-sz, plist-sz. Can you guess what SZ stands for?
Z?
Size.
Oh.
It tells you the size of the run queue and the size of the process list.
I would not have gotten that.
And then it tells you your load also, your load average for 1 minute, 5 minute, and 15 minute. It also, if you're on the newer ones, it tells you you're blocked, which is the number of tasks that are currently blocked or waiting for IO to complete.
Hmm.
And then you also have the dash E and S and E flags that let you set a start and end time for information gathered. And then you use the dash F, lets you read from a different day's file. Okay, and I will give you, this is a real life example of a SAR command I used last night at work. And I'm posting it into the IRC right now. I will not be reading this out loud.
Oh! I can see why. It looks...
Yeah, it's pretty long.
Yeah, you're not going to read that out.
No. What it, I will explain what it did, though. What it did was for the hours between 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., it, for the last, for all the days from the 11th to last night, showed me the RAM, the memory usage on this server.
Oh, okay.
Because we were, me and that's one of the guys nice. Were talking about something last night, and we're like, man, this seems to happen like almost every day, and we looked at these, and like,
yeah.
Five out of the times, it happened at almost exactly the same time every night.
Isn't so that interesting?
Something's happening, and we got to now figure out what's going on with that server.
Mm-hmm. Some kind of backup?
Something's maybe? Happening. And it's
it,
we figured out that it coincides with the, with our MySQL dumps.
Mm.
And but we think that's coincidental.
Oh, okay.
We think that's coincidental.
Okay.
So.
Maybe a cron job is kicking off.
I don't know. That's what I'm going to do the next night I work, Monday
okay.
night. I'm going to look at the user's cron jobs on that.
Okay.
Server and see what they look like.
Yeah, I mean, that could be.
But so, that is an example of me using SAR at work.
Yeah, for those of you who are only listening, it is a very lengthy, I mean, I can see the repetition because you're asking to check the log, bar log, and I see that repeated.
Yeah, because I want to
so
check every day.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, I mean, I wrote this freehand mm-hmm. while I was sitting there just at
that
the terminal, but if I had
do.
Scripted it, I could have done it in much less lines.
Because
I would have created variables. I would have created variables and dropped variables in.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
But.
Well, that's cool. Have you ever heard of, speaking of system exploration and monitoring tools, have you ever heard, there's a new one, I guess, Sysdig. Have you heard of it?
No.
Yeah, it just came out, I think a few weeks ago. Yeah, earlier this month on the 3rd of April. So. And it kind of takes several other tools and just puts them on steroids or something to that effect.
But what does it do? Does it gather data continuously the way SAR does, or?
Well, you can create a trace file that you can export to a different machine. You can slice your trace data with a filter. You can extract CPU. I think this is more for like. I don't know. You can extract CPU usage or check where disk I/O is happening or follow the data exchange on a network connection. Sysdig, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's a whole...
SAR has the ability...
And Lua scripts, you can use Lua.
SAR has the ability to do network information gathering. Mm-hmm. I never use it for that, though.
Yeah, and they call their Lua scripts chisels because you go in there and you can chisel out pieces. So anyway, I saw this a couple days ago and I thought, oh, you know... Because when I find something like this, I always think of you, Matt, because I know that you use quite a few tools at work, and this one was new, and I just was wondering if it's something that, and you know, it's open source, of course. I'm going to paste that in the chat just because I feel that's the thing I should do. Oops, you see here, put that in there. There we go. Oh.
What the hell is this Nancy thing doing?
She just repeats what
I know.
What I say.
It's kind of annoying.
Why?
I don't like this Nancy bot.
Just for you, man.
Well, here's the thing, Nancy, though.
Nancy does a lot of other things.
I noticed that what she did, I just posted the site in there, but it looks to me like she pulls the title out and posts that separately, which I think makes
so
a lot of sense.
So you can see what you're going to be clicking on before you actually click on it.
Yeah, I like that. I like it. I like it, Tony.
All right.
Oh, Mary's not being a contrarian at all.
Yeah. Hey, now, what are we moving on to now? Did I talk about glances?
Feedback.
Did I talk about glances a few weeks ago?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right, good. All right. Actually, no, KDE Corner.
Oh, you have KDE Corner stuff? All right, let's do it.
Well, we only just released 4.13 2 days ago. And actually, the thing, what really kind of caught my eye about this release is the fact that they're moving away from Nepomuk. And they are... moving in a different direction with a tool called, a utility called Baloo. So I guess we're going to see. I haven't upgraded any of my machines to 4.13 yet, but I'll be curious to see how that performs. And I think we had planned to have a KDE release party, weren't we?
Yes. Oh, tonight.
Did anybody read my
I did. I even told the guys at work.
Yeah.
But they're going to the Motor City Brewery and getting drunk.
Is anybody coming to it?
I'm coming. I'll be
all right.
There.
All right.
One-eyed Betty's.
One-eyed Betty's in Ferndale. That's right. 7 o'clock. And Tony's begging us again.
What?
I'm going to try to go. I don't know. It's just it's being a holiday weekend. Family stuff.
I was the one that wanted it. I know. We're giving you a hard time.
No, we're not. You're really begging us on it. We're kind of getting upset about it.
Anyway, if we're still going to do it, we better do it, or we better cancel it.
No, I'm going to be there.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to find the joint.
It's easy. It's on 9 Mile.
9 Mile and what?
Between Livernois and Woodward.
Oh, so it's way over there on 9 Mile.
Mm-hmm. Well, remember, Woodward angles, so... It's
still way over there for me. If I come up Beach Daily and make a right on 9 Mile.
Oh. Half hour later, you'll be there.
Yeah.
And by that, for people who may not be familiar with the area, he's way, way west, probably about, 30 minutes.
Yeah.
20 to 30 minutes.
20
minutes,
I would
20
say.
20 minutes west. So, it could be a scenic drive.
That's what I'm going to do. So.
All right. Okay, and I think, as far as Kubuntu, of course, released their trusty tar. They'll release their trusty tar this week. So I'll be upgrading eventually.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really all I had for my KDE corner.
All right. Well, we have some...
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is... 313-626-9140. And I don't think we have the listener feedback line anymore.
Oh, no.
Well, it's like $30 a year, and I don't know. Have we gotten a call?
I think we've had 2 calls in the last 3 years.
Yeah. Trucker Rich.
That's right.
Where is he? Okay. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
So we have some listener feedback, though.
he announced ceremoniously.
I'm going back. Somebody, Brent, wants to send us some beer.
Yeah.
I'm all for it, Brent. Send it to Tony's address. He gave you it. Send him beer.
That's right. Send it on.
I am the only one that can usually drinks during our live recordings because I've been up all night. So please send us beer.
I might have one for breakfast.
So, yeah, so what he says that Mary had talked about resurrecting the, is it alive?
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that did the cameo for
that's
us before.
Right. He did.
Yeah, so fun. All three of us were able to do it, is it alive?
Right.
I think we're going to open it up, and if you're interested in doing it is live, put it together, let us know ahead of time. We can schedule it, and then you'll be on IRC and post us the questions, and then we'll reply.
Yeah. I'm all for it, because I would love to bring back Is It Alive.
Yeah.
If all three of us could play, I'd love to kick both your asses.
I'll bring it back. Or we can.
So that's pretty cool, and he says that he needs an address to send beer.
And you did give him your address.
I did, yep. He says he lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, and they have some lovely micro brews.
My only stipulation is IPAs. Don't listen to these two. No. IPAs.
Porter.
That's what you want to send.
he should send us 3 6-packs, one of our own.
There you go.
Oatmeal stout is mine.
IPA, anything
right.
IPA.
That would be a huge friend of the show. Or you can mix and match and put them all in one 6-pack.
Two stouts for Tony on the end. Send me 2 IPAs, your choice. And
lager.
And Mary would like lager. So that's a 6-pack right
there. Or a red beer.
All
right. So, but you're not under any obligation to do that. All right.
Yeah, all right.
No. Don't listen to Mary. You are obligated. You have made the offer. Now you are obligated.
Okay. All right. I guess you are.
All right. So there is... We were talking about our website being redirected by someone... Or I thought maybe there's something, a bug or something going on. I only have one response, and it was from Joe, and he says he gets redirected to this rebaterules.net website, which sounds like there's spyware on his computer.
Yes.
I haven't seen it. I've had friends.
You know what one of the most recent attacks are doing is?
I don't get anything. Yeah.
No. What they're doing is they're hacking your home router.
Yeah.
And they're changing the DNS settings to a poison DNS server.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh,
and that'll
scary.
Affect you whether you're running Linux, Windows, Mac OS, anything.
Yeah.
Because that's your DNS.
Right.
And they're hacking in because your firmware isn't updated, or they just guess your password?
Because you've left it set to the default usually.
Yeah, it's on the default. So definitely change your default password and then you won't be
And reset your router to factory settings, then change your default password.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, and then we had an email from Guillaume, which we touched on earlier.
I thought we talked about that, Guillaume.
That's right.
I thought we talked about it last time.
It came in on the 9th, so it was after the last show.
Mm. We talked about it this show.
We talked about it a little bit this show then.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. It was appropriate to the conversation, so why not?
That's right, and he included a link for 10 great tips, or very good tips, to improve your Bash scripting skills.
Yes.
So I'll put that in the show notes. Oh, and then also the thing about GitOps and Shift,
Using Shift instead of GitOps.
GNU World Order. Clat2 did a talk about that.
About Shift, yeah.
About Shift, yeah. So I'm going to stick these in the show notes.
Okay.
Put them in the IRC, too, just for shits and giggles.
Yeah, so we can click on it. Because I don't have that email open. All right.
All right, let's see. What else? I'm looking through my email here.
Boy, it's so strange, Tony. While you do that, I'm just going to talk about for a second about the fact that for some reason, the Conqueror browser, you know, that KDE browser, is opening on my machine through Wine.
What?
Why would that happen?
Because it's
no comment.
I just don't understand it.
Yeah, no comment.
Oh, it's eating at you, isn't it, Matt? But anyway, I'm not quite sure why. But
And I think we had Brent emailed us also.
What did Brent say?
Brent said...
Something I already read?
Did you already read Brent? Oh, shit. It was above the Guillaume, so I thought we were going from the bottom up. I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, it was yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, something you already said. F you, buddy. And I think that was it. That was all I have anyway, just Brent and Guillaume.
Yeah, that's all I saw, so...
Okay.
All right. So we're going on to the last part of the show, which is...
Featured Music of the Week.
Our music. So I am going to pick a random number.
And we're going to sing it? One.
No. Oh, I found a YouTube video that we could strip the audio out and use. Oh, it's called Kill-9.
We'll use that for next time.
Kill-9?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
So what I'm going to do...
How long is it?
It's just a regular song. It's like 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes.
Could use it for the Penguin.
Is it Creative Commons?
I'm sure it is. It's just these college kids.
It sure is.
It might not even be licensed at all. It was just these college kids at Stanford doing it on the quad, and a bunch of other college kids watching them. Yeah.
Well, I'll look that up. Although, for right now, I'm going to, for this show, it's going to be a random song from the top 15 of the Creative Commons hits.
Oh.
cchits.net.
Oh, okay.
So on my terminal, I'm using a command.
A random number generator?
A random number. I'm picking a
NSA
random
approved?
Number between... between...
NSA approved random number.
15 and 1. And it comes up with number 14. The song is called Skyline by Lagomorpha.
What?
Lagomorpha.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I can only imagine.
All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 124.
Easter eggs.
Easter egg, Easter egg. One Easter egg.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying, have a good fortnight. See you next fortnight.
And the next show is at PenguinCon.
That's
it
right.
It is.
Come
I
see
I still have to make my hotel reservation. Damn.
And I've got a review that I'm doing of Gobo Linux.
Do we think there are hotel rooms left? I hope
no.
so.
Probably not.
Oh, damn.
I think I'm going to end up driving back and forth.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not. Because it's too far. Where is it?
It's sleeping
for
in
you,
car.
It's Southfield. For you, it's like 20 minutes.
Oh, maybe I'll drive back and forth too. Are you sure it's in Southfield?
Yes.
Where?
Oh, my God.
I thought it was in Novi.
Enterprise Line Lane or whatever. What's that? What's the big gold building off of 10, the Lodge?
Well, that's in that. That's like right by my house almost.
You can go to penguincon.com.
Mm-hmm.
No.
No, well.
Or .org. Don't go to .com. Probably doesn't take you anywhere.
Or it'll be like whitehouse.com.
Yeah, so it's in Southfield. I think it's at, is it the Westin? Why doesn't it just tell me right here? Hotel reservations about, oh, this sheet. Is it? I don't know. Anyway, so we are doing Sunday morning at 9 a.m. I am doing a GNUPG talk. And there's going to be an encryption panel also that I'm going to be sitting on.
Hotel.
It is at 1500 Town Center, Southfield, Michigan. It's at the Westin mm-hmm. in Southfield.
Yep.
And there are other hotels nearby.
Yeah, the Overflow is a Holiday Inn Express.
Mm-hmm.
And that's $102 a night.
Ooh, you monster, a special effects makeup demonstration with Kat McConnell. That should be good. All right.
They still have a link up for book a room at the hotel.
Yeah, it says rooms are available. Currently available.
Ooh, they got an additional room block. That is why.
Mmm, that's good. Well, we're just kind of randomizing here, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're pretty much done. So
yeah, we're done.
Yeah, thanks
for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you very
thanks
much.
Thanks for watching.
Have a good day.
Thank you for being there. We love you.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comments, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit LHSpodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your minds.